Well, greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Wharton Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Wharton. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 80 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on wisdom when we come back. Hey, let me ask you this. What do you think is wrong with the Ten Commandments? Because it's pretty obvious that something is wrong, very wrong, with the Ten Commandments because they've been banned from our public schools, banned from our public institutions. The Ten Commandments have been banned from our national consciousness. Now, instead of these 10 simple time-tested laws, we see the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto in their place, and they teach the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto in our schools, our public institutions. We've made them a part of our national consciousness. Now, this is a pretty radical change in our political and moral outlook over the past 50 years, don't you think? Are you aware, for instance, that your daughter couldn't receive an aspirin in your public school without your consent, but your daughter can have an abortion arranged through that same public school nurse without even your knowledge, much less your consent? And that's why I contend that the solution to this moral perversion, this national insanity, is to go back to what worked. Let's go back to the Ten Commandments. Let's go back to the Mosaic Law. You know, our founding fathers practiced and they advocated the Ten Commandments. They even put 22 principles of that law, the Ten Commandments, into our federal constitution. And there's still one school left in America that teaches this entire Mosaic Law, the Ten Commandments, and all 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments, as well as the penalties and the 33 benefits that we all receive for their observance. Now, you know, every law has a penalty. There's no such thing as a broken law without a penalty. You don't have to know what the penalty is to suffer from its effect. So whether we call this the Mosaic Law or the Law of God or Common Law or Natural Law or Karma or something else, it's automatic. It works just like AIDS, herpes, and VD, which just happens to be the natural penalty for adultery. Now, if you'd like more information, why don't you call and order our free General Law CD package? That's the place to start. It's a four-hour commentary on the law in general, and it's educational. It's informative. It's entertaining. Best of all, it's free. You can call and order one right now. The number to call, 417-273-4967. If you're online, you can go to our website. It's georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. Just click on the email machine and send us an email request for that free General Law CD package. Again, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we've been talking about wisdom, and as a corollary to wisdom, there's foolishness. If I said, "You fool," you'd be offended. If I called you a wise ass, you wouldn't be quite as offended. It's still a retort. It's still a slander, but it's a little better slander. Wise ass is a lot better slander than "you fool." We all despise foolishness, and we don't like the idea that we may be made a fool of. But for some reason, we tend to wallow more in foolishness than we do in wisdom. If we take a look at the past, and then we look at our mistakes, I mentioned before, there's two ways for us to learn. We can learn from revelation, that's somebody else's mistake. Or we can learn by reinventing the wheel. That's called experience. My old dad told me, he said, experience, son, is the best teacher. You can't beat it. But it's a god-awful hard way to learn. Now, if we have to go out and reinvent the wheel, then I guess we just have to go out and reinvent the wheel. But it would be wiser, would it not, if we could learn from somebody else's mistakes. Now, the Swiss people have learned from other people's mistakes. They avoid war like AIDS, herpes, and VD. I can't remember the last time that the Swiss people got involved in a war. Their money is sound. For 227 years, the Swiss have had the soundest currency or the soundest money in the world. They avoid war like AIDS, herpes, and VD. They live up in their little mountain kingdom up there. Every man up there has a gun. They're all armed and dangerous. And they just live their lives. The Nazis surrounded them in World War II, and they just live their lives like, so what's the problem? The French were having problems with the Germans, but the Swiss didn't. Now, everybody was having problems with the Germans except the Swiss and the Swedes. For some reason, they developed enough wisdom, or they had wisdom, or their political leaders had enough wisdom to keep them out of both sides. Both countries were neutral during World War II and during World War I. Now, Americans talked about neutrality, up until World War I broke out, you know, on our side, 1917. We wanted to butt out of the European war. I don't know why we got involved in it. I guess it was for the money. I guess it was for the prestige. Then along comes World War II, and surely, you know, everybody today says, if it hadn't been for America, the world would have been conquered by the Nazis. Oh, I'm not sure that that's true. And I think they would have conquered a lot of it, but I kind of doubt that they would have conquered the United States. And that's because we have a special relationship with our Creator, with our God, and we have a contract. Most people don't know much about this contract, but this contract was negotiated by Moses out of Mount Sinai. And under the terms and conditions of the contract, If we perform on our half of the contract, then God says that he'll perform on his half of the contract. And he says, I'll be an enemy to your enemies and an adversary to your adversaries. He tells you that in Exodus 23:20. Yeah, here's the story. He says, behold, I send an angel before you to keep you in the way and to bring you into the place that I've prepared. Now beware of this angel, beware of him, and obey his voice and provoke him not. For I will not pardon your transgressions, or he, the angel, will not pardon your transgressions because my name is in him. And in verse 22, he says, now here's the kicker. He says, if you will indeed obey his voice and do all that I speak, then I'll be an enemy to your enemies and an adversary to your adversaries. For my angel shall go before you and bring you in unto the Amorites, the Hittites, the Perizzites, the Canaanites, the Hivites, the Nazis, the Japs, and everybody else, and I'll cut them off. I'll cut them off. And in World War II, that's precisely what happened. When the Japs attacked us at Pearl Harbor, we went to war with them. And they got cut off at Midway. And that was their last offensive operation. 6 months after Pearl Harbor was their last offensive operation. From then on, it was all defensive. Now, I'm not belittling World War II, and I'm not here to second-guess President Roosevelt and the good people, you know, that gave us World War II, but I wanted to point out that it caused us a lot of misery. And the Swiss and the Swedes didn't suffer through that misery. And I suspect that if we'd have butted out, we probably would have saved ourselves a lot of misery also. And that's what wisdom is all about. And the Bible talks a lot about wisdom. It talks a lot about foolishness. And we've covered a lot of that. For instance, the communist story. Remember, we started off here with the communist story. We Americans like to call ourselves the anti-communists. And yet we practice all 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto. 10th plank being free education for all children in public school. We send all of our children to public school. Now, there are a few people in America that do not send their children to public schools. Those few people are not practicing the 10th plank to the Communist Manifesto. And then there's the heavy progressive income tax. That's the second plank. There are some people in America that don't participate in the income tax. Not many, but there are a few. They do not practice the second plank to the Communist Manifesto. And then the fifth plank calls for a central bank, you know, like our Federal Reserve. And there are a few people in the country that do not participate in the banks and banking and Federal Reserve notes, and they deal in gold and silver and wheat, corn, beans, honey, and oil. But as a general rule, if you take a look at the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto, we practice all 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto while we go around telling people that we're anti-communist. Well, it's hypocrisy, number one. It's foolishness, number two. It's a denial of what's actually out there. Now, if you want to be a communist, I'm not suggesting that communism's all bad. After all, millions of people subscribe to communism. They love it. They think it's the greatest thing since sliced white bread. And they're out selling it and advocating it, and it's a great program. Or at least they think it's a great program. I personally didn't think it would sell that good, so I decided not to participate. And then there's Christmas. Now, millions of people participate in Christmas, and it must be a lot of fun, and it must be exciting. But we all know Jesus wasn't born on December the 25th. Everybody knows that. Birthdays are unscriptural. Not very many people know that. Christmas is commercial. Everybody knows that. Santa Claus is a demon. Most people don't know that, but it's in Revelation 2:15 and Revelation 2:6. It tells you that St. Nicholas, the doctrine of the Nicolaitans, the doctrine of St. Nicholas, is demonism. And then we were told not to practice that in Deuteronomy 4:2 and 12:32. And in Jeremiah 10, verses 1 through 6, it identifies the Christmas tree and tells you not to learn that way. But we do it anyway. Now, is that wise or is that foolish? I don't know. I'm not going to sit here and second guess you. But, you know, if the creator of the universe tells you not to do something and you go out and do it anyway, it would strike me as not being the wisest decision in the world. Especially if you have to go talk to this guy at some point in the future. We talk about experience and revelation. And in our society, we hate revelation. Just hate it. Nobody's going to tell me. I had a guy here one time. We were talking about the scripture, and we were talking about clean and unclean meat. And he said, he was really angry, and he said, nobody's going to tell me what to eat. Well, okay. I'm not here to tell you what to eat. You can eat Jimmy Dean pure pork sausage if you want to. But the creator of the universe pointed out that pork and pork products are not good for the human anatomy. I know they're full of vitamins and minerals and riboflavin. They're good for dogs. You know, dogs can eat pig. Buzzards can eat pig. Humans can't. And if you do, you're going to have some disease problems. I always tell people, you know, if you're going to eat pig, you need health insurance. If you're going to eat unclean meats and white sugar and white flour and so on, then you need health insurance. And this guy died at age 47. He was here. And about 5 years later, I got a call from his wife that old Rodney had died. And he was right. Nobody is going to tell him what to eat. And when I suggested that there was somebody out here that had a better idea as to what kind of fuel he should put in his body, he said, well, I'm not going to be told by anybody. I'm going to eat what I want. Well, okay. He did, and he died at age 47. Now, he was designed to live to age 75, 3 score and 10, 70 years. Average lifespan here in America is 75 now. And so here's a case of revelation from God that says don't eat pig, and then here's the experimentation from Rodney down Waco, Texas. And he went down and he experimented, and he died at age 47. Well, okay. Now, what I want to do is I want to learn from Rodney's experience. I watch people quite carefully, and I observe, and I see people getting sick all the time. And then when they're sick, I like to ask them, well, what do you eat? Do you drink a lot of Coca-Cola? You know, people that have diabetes, you know, like, how did you get that diabetes? And by doing that, I can learn from their mistakes. And that's what I call wisdom. That's what the Bible calls wisdom. I learned it from the scripture. I wouldn't have known if somebody hadn't told me. My dad told me when I was a kid, he said, son, next time you have some of these wild ideas, you know, kids are, you know, you get these wild ideas and you go out and you want to experiment. And so you get into trouble. And so my dad told me one time, he said, next time you get one of these wild hairs up here, you know what, come and ask me what the conclusion of it is. And I'll tell you what happened when I did it. Yeah, that's what he told me. He said, you come and ask me and I'll tell you what happened when I tried it. So what he was saying, in effect, is why don't you learn from my experience so that you don't have to suffer learning from your own? Now, you'd have thought that we would have learned from our wars in the past, but we haven't. And now we're talking about war with Iran. You know, we haven't learned anything from Iraq, and we haven't learned from Afghanistan. I'm going to give you a little word to the wise here about Afghanistan. The British back in the 1800s, they went into Afghanistan, and they tried to subdue it. And at the time, they were the world's number one military power. They were the world's number one economic power. I mean, the Great Britain, you know, the sun never set on the British Empire. They went into Afghanistan, and they tried to subdue those Afghanis over there, and they failed. And then the Afghanis whipped their butts and kicked them out. Well, now there's lesson number one. And then the Russians tried it back in the 1980s, and they failed. And they went home with their tails between their legs. And then the other day, George Bush said, well, it's time for us to take on these Afghanis. And so we went over there, and we just cleaned them out in, I don't know, 3 weeks, something like that. And now we're still over there in Afghanistan. We're still bogged down. Now, those Afghanis, they'll sit over there, and they'll fight with you for 150 years. And I'm going to tell you right now, Americans do not have the stomach for a 150-year war. Those Afghanis have been fighting from day one. That's what they do for a living. It's the only thing they know. Now, if you got nothing better to do than sit over there and fight and die with those Afghanis, you know, then get after it. But you know, most people have something better to do in life. And I can't think of very much that's of any great value over there, save for the heroin that they produce. That's of great value. So as a result of that, we did not learn from the British, we did not learn from the Russians, and we had to go over there and experience it ourselves. And we are, and we will, and in the final analysis, America will leave Afghanistan just like the Russians did, with your tails between your legs, just like everybody else. Now, we didn't need to go over there and spend our treasure and spend our lives and waste our time, effort, and energy trying to do what everybody else has failed at. We could have learned from other people's experience, but we didn't. Now, over here in the book of Proverbs, there's two chapters I wanted to share with you, because they're chapters on wisdom. And if you want wisdom, then here's the place to get it. If you don't, stay away from it. Don't want to buy into this. It starts off in chapter 1 of Proverbs. It says it's the Proverbs of Solomon, the son of David, the king of Israel. To know wisdom and instruction, to perceive the words of understanding, to receive the instruction of wisdom, justice, and judgment, and equity. To give subtlety or subtlety to the simple, to the young man knowledge and discretion. A wise man will hear and will increase learning, and a man of understanding will attain unto wise counsels. To understand a proverb and the interpretation thereof, the words of the wise and their dark sayings. Dark sayings of the wise. The wise man has a saying, and the fool listens, and he can't grasp it. What's that guy talking about? Why, that's stupid. Why, I don't understand that. Well, that's because it isn't designed for fools to understand. The wise understand because it's in code. And that's why the scripture is written in code. And in Isaiah 28, it identifies what that code is. Now, the fear of the eternal is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction. So fools then despise wisdom and instruction. Fools cannot learn from revelation. They have to go after it from their own experience. And that's where science comes in. And a science lady back here in Pennsylvania the other day, she was on NOVA. And she said the problem with revelation is that you can't prove it. You can't test it in the laboratory. It's not true. I'm sure she believes that, but it's not true. And in the scripture, there's time after time that God says, prove me now herewith. Prove whether or not this is true. In fact, the scripture is predicated upon proof. And in the scripture, it says, prove all things and hold fast that which is good. It does not tell you to accept it on faith or believe it because it's in the glossy pages of the science textbook. And the science textbooks that are being used today, 20 years from now, they'll all be thrown out, and they'll have new textbooks telling you new stories. Because they find out about every 20 years, sometimes less than that, but about every 20 years, they find out that what they wrote 20 years ago is all false. Or most of it was. You're not using the science textbooks of 1900 or 1850 or 1790. You're using the textbooks that were published in 1990 or 1995 or 2000. The Bible is still the same book that it was 1,000 years ago, 2,000 years ago, and 3,000 years ago. Nothing that Moses wrote here has changed any. Solomon wrote this about 1,000 BC, 900 BC, long enough. Nothing has changed. Everything that he said back there 3,000 years ago is still true, accurate, and correct today. And it's still provable today. And he goes on, he says, my son, hear the instruction of your father and forsake not the law of your mother. for they shall be an ornament of grace unto your head and chains about your neck. Now there's a commandment that says honor your father and mother. And one of the things about honoring your father and mother is following instructions. And there's a benefit that comes from it, that your life may be long. Long life. You want to live to be 90? Obey your father and mother. It's a word of wisdom. It's what my dad told me. He said, son, come and ask me, and I'll tell you. Learn from revelation. Now, science is the modality by which we learn from our own experience. We learn from experimentation. You'll never forget it. You know, it sounded like the time I told you about one of our classmates. And there's an overhead there at Lolita, where the railroad goes over the highway. And the highway makes an S-turn underneath the railroad. And this overhead here has a great big concrete abutment. And you're headed straight into this abutment, then you have to turn to the left, and then immediately after you turn to the left and go under the railroad tracks, you turn to the right and you go on the opposite side of the railroad tracks. In other words, you're traveling on the east side of the tracks, and you're going to go to the west side of the tracks. Well, they've outlawed those now. They don't build highways and railroads like that anymore, because you have to slow to 35 to make that turn. And there's a sign back there, and it says slow to 35. Now, you know, when you're 16, 18 years old, you know that the highway department's lying to you. And so I was in school one day, and somebody came by and said, well, I went under the Lolita underpass at 40 miles an hour. And we all know the sign says 35. And so somebody else came along, you know, a few days later, a week or two later, and said, well, I went under there at 45 miles an hour. Well, then somebody else comes along and says, well, I can go under there at 50 miles an hour. You know, so pretty soon there's this contest. Now, how fast can you go under that overpass? And so one day the word came down, there's this kid, he had a 49 Merc. Now, these Mercurys, 1949, 50, 51, were pretty low to the ground. I had a 47 Plymouth, and that Plymouth, you know, was high. It had a high center of gravity, and this Mercury had a low center of gravity. And we'd gotten this up to about 55 miles an hour. Well, anyway, Ronnie went under the underpass at about 55, maybe trying to do a little better than that. And you know, there's a thing called the gravity and centrifugal force and physics, and, you know, these various laws, you know, that we just don't have any control over. Anyway, he hit the side of the abutment over there, ripped off the side of his car, rolled it over, and totaled it out. And so we all learned a lesson. Now, I couldn't go under there at 55. I think my car would go under there at about 45. And it was kind of a hair-raising experience, as I recall. But, you know, those of us that had these older, higher cars, you know, we couldn't get into there. This Mercury, you know, it'd go under there a little bit. Now, imagine today if somebody had, you know, a 280Z or a Porsche, or, you know, or some of these sports cars over there, hell, you might be able to go under that thing at 55 or 60 or maybe even 65. I don't know. But here's my point. There's a limit to it. And what have you gained after you've gone under this thing at 110? I mean, let's suppose for the sake of our discussion, I'm Evel Knievel and I can go under this underpass at 110 miles an hour. What have you gained when you got through with it? It's all vanity. You know, you could sit there and say, well, I can do what the highway department says I can't do. They say you got to slow to 35 and I don't have to do that. Kind of reminds me of a guy, you know, that's speeding down the highway at 110 miles an hour, you know. Okay, well, you're in a hurry. And every time you raise your rate of speed by 10 miles an hour, you increase your chances of getting killed by some percentage point. I mean, you know, if you don't travel down the highway at any speed, your stop is zero, your chances of getting killed then are zero. If you go 1 mile an hour, it's not very high. If you go 10 miles an hour, it gets a little higher, and 20 and 30 and 50. Pretty soon, you know, at 110, you know, by the time you get up to 1,000 miles an hour traveling down Highway 160, your chances of getting killed approach absolute certainty. You know, the faster you go, the more certain it is that you're going to have a wreck, and the more certain it is you're going to get killed. And so somewhere in between there is wisdom. Somewhere between zero and 1,000 miles an hour is wisdom. And the highway department comes out and they put up signs, and they put those signs up there to give you revelation. And that revelation is 35 miles an hour is pretty safe. You want to go 45, well, you know, take your life in your own hands. But is it really wise? I mean, you're only going to live here once. You're going to be resurrected, but you know life is once in the physical form. And then, you know, the next time will be the resurrection, and that's a long time in between. So the fear of the eternal is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction. And so people, you know, like us, you know, at age 16, 18, were acting foolishly. We were fools trying to test the speed by which we could go under that overpass. Now, here's God again. He says, because I have called and you refused, and I've stretched out my hand and no man regarded, but you have said it not all of my counsel, and you would have none of my reproof. I also will laugh at your calamity, and I will mock when your fear cometh. When your fear comes as desolation and your destruction comes as a whirlwind, when distress and anguish comes upon you, then shall they call upon me, but I will not answer. They shall seek me early, but they shall not find me. For they that hated knowledge and did not choose the fear of the eternal, they would have none of my counsel. They despised all of my reproof, and therefore shall they eat of the fruit of their own way, and they shall be filled with their own devices. For the turning away of the simple shall slay them, and the prosperity of fools shall destroy them. But whoso hearkens unto me shall dwell safely, and shall be quiet from fear of evil. Let's go through that one once more. Let me tell you what my granny used to say about these kinds of statements. Because I have called, and you refused, I have stretched out my hand, and no man regarded. But you have said it not all of my counsel, and you would have none of my reproof. I also will laugh at your calamity, and I'll mock when your fear comes. Well, granny used to say, you made your bed, sweetheart, now go sleep in it. Now, God has given us instruction. He said, now this is the kind of meat you want to eat, and here's the kind of meat you don't want to eat. And I told you about this guy from Waco, Texas, comes up here, and he says, nobody's going to tell me what to eat. And when people get sick, they call the law school, and they say, well, I've got cancer. As if I'm supposed to, oh, I'm so sorry that you have cancer. You know, kind of like a preacher, you know, they get kind of syrupy. Oh, I'm so sorry. Okay, I'm going to put some money in the offering plate, and then we'll say some prayers for you. God has already told you, you don't need to pray. He says, I'm not going to hear this crap. I don't know why people don't pay attention, but, you know, we go about our business in life, and we say, well, I'm not going to listen to you, and I'm going to do it my way. In fact, there's a song that's out, and I think it was sung by was that guy, that crooner. It wasn't Bing Crosby. It was some other crooner guy. And it says, and we did it our way. We did it my way. You know, okay. And it came out all right. And sometimes it does. Sometimes you can go out here and you can do it your way. Hey, I went under the underpass at 55. Ha ha. So there. What do you think of that? I think you're a fool. I think you got your head up the wrong end of your anatomy. You know, now that I'm an old man. Of course, when I was 18. Wow. Old Tom, he went under at 55. Whew, that's really cool. Man. And fools love foolishness. A wise man would look at that, you know. Some older guy, you know, would look at that and say, these kids got their heads at the wrong end. Now, let me give you a reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Now, The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, then please go to our homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives that can be accessed to the webpage as well. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do it 7 days a week. Now, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling here to the Law School. The number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or of this local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour, an editorial review, then please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Or you can call us at 417-273-4967. Okay, we're talking about wisdom here. Now, there's a revelation here in the Scripture. A guy by the name of God, we call him God. It's not really his name, but we call him that anyway. And we want to know this wisdom. We want to know understanding. We want to know what the answer, what the result is going to be. And so he says, you know, wisdom cries out. Now, wisdom's every place. But, you know, when I tried to tell you, you people wouldn't listen. And so he gets a little bit uptight here, and he says, you know, I'm going to laugh at your calamity. I'm going to mock when your fear comes. Now, remember, we were told to use just weights and balances. Our founding fathers used just weights and balances. Back in 1792, they came out with what they called the Coinage Act of 1792. Until 1933, we used gold coin. And then we got some kind of a bug up our hineys, and we decided that we wanted to have a central bank. And so we created this Federal Reserve, and they gave us paper money. And then in 1933, President Roosevelt closed the gold window and took gold out of circulation. We haven't had gold coin since 1933. Well, until 1986, we got it back in 1986, but for a long period of time, we didn't have it. And they took the silver coin out of circulation, and we went on to a fiat currency. 1971, President Nixon closed the gold window. And so now, here's where we're at. Here we are in the year 2007. Our stock market is volatile. Gold is at $800 an ounce. Our currency has lost 98% of its value. We got a $9 trillion national debt. We're surety underwriters for another, $50 trillion. America is insolvent. And our God is laughing at us, laughing at our foolishness. And our economy is in recession, has been for about a year. And they've been lying to us. You know, our government lies a lot through its statistics. And they tell us that the economy is still growing. It isn't. They tell us inflation is 4%, and they're lying. It's 11. And in 2008, it's going to 15%. And our God is laughing at us. He's laughing at our foolishness because we were told not to do that. And we would not listen to just weights and balances. We had them, and then we threw it away. And that's the tragedy of America. You know, we had everything going for us, and we turned around and threw it away. Our founding fathers followed these scriptural principles of law in economics, and we threw it away. And now our God tells us he's going to laugh at us when our calamity comes upon us. When we go into this Great Depression, hyperinflation, the collapse of the economy, he says, I'm going to laugh at you. You gave me the finger. You wouldn't listen to me. And you can rest assured that when this happens, people are going to be praying. They're just going to be praying to Jesus. People get real religious, you know, when calamity comes. Governor down in Georgia the other day, I saw him on TV, he's praying. He was praying right there on TV for rain. They haven't had rain down there for a long time. I never saw the governor of Georgia ever get on TV and thank God for the rain when they had it. But boy, when they don't have rain, boy, they get real excited. Now I pray for rain. Now God told you, he said he's going to give you a drought. He's going to turn your heaven to iron and your earth to brass. You know, if you give him the finger, no, listen to us. Said that's what he's going to do to us. And now he's doing it to us. So I've saved my breath. I'm not praying to Jesus and asking him for Jack Diddley Squat. He already told me he ain't going to listen to me. He said, hey, Gordon, you gave me the finger. Now I'm not going to listen to you. And then I'm going to laugh at you. So I learned my lesson. I said, well, you know, maybe I better quit giving him the finger, and maybe I'll pay a little closer attention to what old dad tells me. Now there's a little bit more to this. He says, when your fear comes as desolation and your destruction comes as a whirlwind, when distress and anguish comes upon you, then shall they call upon me. Oh, yeah, here's the governor of Georgia. Yeah, when you got this drought, when you're in all of this trouble, then you'll call upon me. You'll pray, oh, Jesus, please help us. Yeah, all these preachers get kind of sanctimonious. But I will not answer. They shall seek me early, but they shall not find me. For that they hated knowledge, and they did not choose the fear of the eternal. You know, we've thrown God out of the schools of Georgia. Now, what in the hell are you people thinking down there? You throw God's hiney out of your schools, and then you turn around and pray and say, give us rain? Talk about foolishness now. I think wisdom would have been, hey, listen, maybe we ought not to throw our God out of our public schools. Maybe we ought not to ridicule and make fun of our God. Maybe we ought to shut our mouths for a change. Never occurred to anybody. So you're down here teaching evolution. Why don't you pray to the God of evolution for rain down in Georgia, Alabama? You people down there in Alabama, you had a Supreme Court justice down there. His name is Roy Moore. And he put the Ten Commandments into the Capitol building, you know, down there in Montgomery, Alabama. God, what a stir up that caused. And so he lost his job. I mean, they threw him out. And they had a big trial down there. Now you people have drought down there in Alabama. And so now why don't you go pray to the God of communism? Why don't you go pray to the God of evolution? Because this God here, now he's not like Roy Moore. No, he's not going to forgive you. He's going to remember that. You give this guy the finger, he remembers it for a long time. He says, for they hated knowledge, and they did not choose the fear of the eternal. They would have none of my counsel. They despised all of my reproof. Therefore shall they eat of the fruit of their own way and be filled with their own devices. You people down there in the Southeast are getting filled with your own devices. See what happened to you down there in New Orleans and on the Gulf Coast? Filled with your own devices. Now somebody's going to send me a letter and say, well, you don't have any empathy. I'm a reporter. I'm not a preacher. I'm not sitting here, you know, like a doctor with a good bedside manner trying to tell you, oh, I just feel so sorry for you poor people down there in the Ninth Ward in New Orleans. And, oh, it makes me feel so bad. Hell, you brought it on yourselves. Pay attention. Here's your God here telling you, you know, you're bringing this on yourselves. You give me the finger, and then you get surprised by the results of it. That's why I tell you, I thought, you know, wisdom here would say, hey, look, maybe we better quit giving this guy the finger. Now, you know, I'm an old barroom guy, you know, and when you get through on a hard day's work, you know, you like to go down to the pub. You English people go down to the pub. You know, we go down to the bar to unwind, you know. So you're sitting here in the bar, and you're having a couple of beers, you know, with the guys, and chewing the rag a little bit. And there's always trouble brewing in a bar. And I don't know why, but there's just always trouble brewing in a bar. And, you know, after a while, you know, when you're a young man, you know, you're out here looking for trouble. It's kind of like driving your car into the Lolita underpass, and you're just kind of looking for something to happen. And so you get in the bar. Now, if you want to stir up a little hate and discontent, you just sidle up to the bar and give some guy the flag, you know, stick it right under his nose over there, and you can get into a brawl, you know, anytime you want. But, you know, if you sit at the table, shut your mouth, and drink your beer, you can walk into pretty near any bar and sit down, have a beer and walk out, and everything's just kind of fine. But you know, if you walk in there with a chip on your shoulder, you can probably find a fight. It goes on all the time, you know, especially down at the Ritz, you know, in Eureka. I remember the Ritz well. So I'm going to tell you that here's your God over here. He's telling you now, you're going to give me the finger over here looking for a fight. And well, you can find it with me. Now, if you want to fight with this guy, well, he's right here ready. You people down the southeast are fine. You guys out there in the west, you know, you haven't had rain now for about 10 years. And it isn't that it doesn't rain at all. It's just that, you know, the Colorado River, you know, which used to have 15 million acre feet a year running down it, now it's running around 5, 6, 7 million, about half. About half. And now you're sitting over there wondering, well, what are we going to do next? And, you know, you're just praying to Jesus, you know. He's already told you, I ain't listening to that crap. Down there in New Orleans, you know, if that wasn't the hand of God, you know, that just slapped you down there, you people aren't paying attention. It's going to happen to you again, you know, one of these days. As soon as you get everything rebuilt, God will give you good weather until you get everything rebuilt, and then send another hurricane over there and destroy it all again. Now, in chapter 2, about 9 verses here, just pay attention here for just a minute. Listen to this. He says, my son, if you will receive my words, and if you hide my commandments with you. Now, notice that word, commandments. Commandments. Do you know what the commandments are? The Ten Commandments. If you will hide my commandments with you, so that you incline your ear unto wisdom, and apply your heart to understanding. You know those Ten Commandments are equated with wisdom and understanding. Let me pause here for a moment and point something out to you. When you're a young man, you can't wait to get into Flo's Whorehouse. Now, I'm old enough now, and I recognize venereal disease. I stopped one time to buy a burl up there in Orrick, California. And this guy's face was pretty grotesque, and his nose was gone. You know, it was not quite gone, but about half of it was gone. And I thought, I wonder what happened to that guy. And I told you about the lady, you know, at the Harrison Apartments, you know, that wore the bandage. This guy wasn't wearing a bandage, you know, he just, half his nose was gone. He's an Indian fellow. And I got talking about him with my wife, and I said, what do you think was wrong with that guy's nose? Syphilis. I mean, she just looked at me like, what's the matter with you, you stupid? Syphilis. That's what he's got, syphilis. And I thought, oh, my God. Yeah, that's right. That's what syphilis does. It just rots the cartilage, you know, just eats the cartilage off of your body. And that's kind of a tough lesson to learn. That guy didn't learn his lesson because maybe nobody gave him any instruction, but I learned from him. Now, if you want to go down to Flo's place over there, you'd have to drag me kicking and screaming to get me into a whorehouse. But, you know, when you're a young man, you know, you can't wait to get in there. That's because young men don't have discretion. Young men don't have much wisdom. At least I didn't when I was young. And I haven't found very much wisdom in very many young people today either. In fact, I think it's worse today than it was when I was a kid. But here's our God now. He's sitting over here saying, now, if you'll incline your ear to understanding, yea, if you cry after knowledge and lift up your voice for understanding, if you seek her like silver and search for her as for hid treasures, then shall you understand the fear of the Eternal and find the knowledge of God. For the Eternal gives wisdom, and out of his mouth comes knowledge and understanding. You want to know where wisdom, knowledge, and understanding comes from? It comes from the Ten Commandments. When we Americans practiced the Ten Commandments instead of the Ten Planks to the Communist Manifesto, we were the wealthiest, most powerful nation in the world, politically, economically, and militarily. And when we threw the Ten Commandments out, we started down a slippery slope about 1950. We started throwing the Ten Commandments out about 1950. And from 1950 to 2000, we've been on the slippery slope. We have gone to the point where we're on the verge of national captivity. Now, the average American today can't see that. He doesn't have very much wisdom. He's foolish. He's chasing after Christmas. I mean, today, you know, these people are chasing after Christmas. The governor of Georgia down there is praying to Jesus over here. He already said, governor, he's already said, I'm not listening to you. Why would you want to talk to some guy that says, I ain't going to listen to him? Now, there is something we could do down there in Georgia. You know, we could start practicing the Ten Commandments for crying out loud. You know, we could come into church and say, hey, parson, why don't you teach us more about the Ten Commandments and the laws of God instead of this religious crap that you've been teaching us and boring us with over the past 10 years? Why don't you teach us something constructive for a change? Teach us the law of God. He lays up sound wisdom, it says here in verse 7, for the righteous. He is a buckler to them that walk uprightly. He keeps the paths of judgment and preserves the way of his saints. And then shall you understand righteousness and judgment and equity, yea, every good path. So we were talking about this the other day. What is wisdom? Wisdom is, and it's associated with, instruction, understanding, justice, judgment, equity, knowledge, truth, righteousness, right, discretion, prudence, witty inventions, and wise counsel. That's what wisdom is associated with. Now, foolishness has some associations also. Foolishness is associated with fools despise wisdom and instruction. Fools die for want of wisdom. Fools hate knowledge. Shame shall be the promotion of fools. Forsake the foolish. The fool shall be servant to the wise. A companion of fools shall be destroyed. Fools mock sin, and a fool despiseth instruction. And it's just that simple. That's why my dad said to me, hey, fool, come and ask me first. And then let me tell you how it worked when I tried it. I couldn't imagine, you know, half the time I couldn't imagine my dad doing some of the things that I had invented or dreamed up. And come to find out, no, he'd already done that. I'll tell you a little story here one time about the Gordons. My Uncle Carol, great guy, my Uncle Carol, he had a girl's name, but they spelled it, you know, kind of funny. He spelled it Carroll. I mean, here's my Uncle Carol, named with a girl. I mean, they could have named him Sue, you know, but they named him Carol. And he kind of a mean guy, too, because, you know, somebody get kind of uppity about talking about him being a something like a key catch, you know, because he had a girl's name, you know, he'd get kind of uptight about that. But anyway, my Uncle Carol, he was a great, great slingshot maker, and he made a slingshot for me. And I'm telling you, I mean, this thing would just make you drool. You know, when you're 10 years old and you got a slingshot made by my Uncle Carol, I mean, you just make anybody drool. It was accurate. It was powerful. It was a marvel. And I had one. I had an Uncle Carol who made me a slingshot. God, I had that slingshot. I was out there shooting that thing everywhere. And my Uncle Carol taught me how to use it. God bless Uncle Carol. Well, anyway, I come in the house one day and I got the slingshot in my back pocket. And my dad said, "What do you got there?" And I took it over and I said, "Look at this. This Uncle Carol made me this slingshot over here." And my dad said, "Let's go try that thing out." And he went out in the alley. He used to put gravel, you know, in the alleys. He went out in the alley and got all these nice rocks out there. My daddy's shooting that thing up and down the alley. He said, "God, that's a good slingshot." And he told me about how he tried to make slingshots and he never could make a good slingshot. And Uncle Carol was making slingshots when he was a kid. And Uncle Carol had the best slingshots that anybody ever had in the neighborhood. Nobody could make a slingshot like Uncle Carol. He just bragged up that slingshot and just made me feel like $1 million. Then he told me, he said, "Son, you better take that slingshot and throw it over there in the garbage can. Get rid of that thing. That's just trouble. And you want to get rid of it." Now, can you believe this? My dad's telling me how great a slingshot this is. We're out there shooting in the backyard. And he told me, "You take that slingshot and you throw that away." And I said, "Why?" He said, "Because you're going to be out here busting windows with that." "Yeah, you're going to be out here busting windows with that slingshot." I said, no, Dad, no, I won't be out busting windows with that slingshot." And says, "Okay." And so some time went by, I don't know, 2 or 3 weeks, something like that. I come in the house one day, he says, "Hey, boy, come over here." Just call me boy. "Hey, boy, come over here." I said, "I've got a bad report about you." And then I said, "Well, what's the bad report, Dad?" And he said, "Well, bad report is you've been out busting windows with that slingshot." Now, see, when I was growing up, if the old man asked you a question over here and you lied about it and got caught lying, oh, geez. You never wanted to lie to your old man, because if you lied to him, why, you know, you might not survive that. There'd be pain, suffering, and weeping, and wailing, and gnashing of teeth for a long time. So I thought about that for a second. I said, "No, I don't want to lie about this." So I thought better about that, because I'd already been instructed in the ways of wisdom about lying the hard way. I experienced that lying thing. And so I said, "Well, maybe I might broke one." And he said, no, it's not one. It's more than one. "How many did you break?" Well, it was a long pregnant pause, and I thought about that for a minute, and I said, "Well, there might be two or three. I don't know exactly." And he said, "Well, I heard it was more like 10 or 15. And then I protested, and I said, no, I didn't break 10 or 15. You know, I might have broke 5 or 6 or 7, but it wasn't 10 or 15, Dad." And he said, "We better go take a look." Okay. So we went out, got in the car, and where are we going? Well, we're going down here to the First Christian Church there at 10th and 8th Street. Right across the street now from the Veterans Memorial Building is this church over here. I think it was the First Christian Church or something. And they had these stained glass windows over there. Well, they had this cannon over here, this artillery piece, and it was covered by bushes. And you could get back there and where this artillery piece was, you could stand behind the bushes, and you could pick up all the ammunition right there underneath the artillery piece and fire it across the street and bust those windows out. Nobody could see you. It was perfect. I mean, it was the best place that you ever saw, except if you couldn't lie to the old man if he asked you the question, you know, if you're not busting out windows. And so that cost me $47. There was seven windows or something like that. They weren't leaded, but they were stained glass. And that was a pretty valuable lesson I learned. That was a whole month's worth of newspaper delivery, $47. I guess I was probably 12, 13 years old, something like that. And so some years later, you know, when I'm 22 or 23 or 25 or something like that, and my dad and I were sitting in the blue room there at our Linda Corners having a beer, and we're chit-chatting a little bit, and so it crossed my mind. And I said, "Dad, how did you know that I booked those windows down there at that church?" And he said, "Well, let me tell you a story." He said, "One time I had a slingshot." And then my dad, your granddad, came to me, and he said, "You take that slingshot, and you throw that away, because you're going to go out there busting windows." And I told him, this is my dad telling me now, he says, I told granddad, I said, no, I won't go out and break any windows. And so some time went by, and my granddad, you know, your granddad came to me, and he says, "Hey," my dad was called Georgie. He said, "Hey, Georgie, come over here." He says, "I got a bad report about you. You've been out busting windows." And so we went down and we took a look at the windows. Sure enough, I'd been busting out some windows. And so I had to pay for them. I had to go out and work and make the money, and I'd pay for those windows. And so some years went by, and I sat down with your granddad, and I said, "Dad, how'd you know I was busting windows?" And he said, "Well, let me tell you a story." He said, "I had a slingshot when I was a kid, about 10 years old. And my dad came to me, and he said, this is my granddad now, his name was George also, so I called him Georgie. He said, Georgie. And he said, yeah, busting out windows. And so granddad, you know, he said, well, yeah, I guess it wasn't. So they went out there and took a look at the windows. And so they had to go out there and fix them, pay for them, you know, one thing or another. And so my granddad asked my great-granddad, he said, you know, when he grew up, he said, how'd you know I was out there busting windows? And so my great-great-granddad told my granddad, he said, well, when I was a kid, I had a slingshot. So now here's the story, you know, among the Gordons over here. So, you know, I had a boy, and I told my boy, I said, when he had a slingshot, I said, now you take that slingshot and you throw it away. So now you got the story. Now here's where wisdom comes from. Wisdom comes from revelation. But if you can't learn from revelation, then you get wisdom from experience. And the Gordons have never been good at learning wisdom from revelation, but we've always been good at it learning from experience. And so from one generation to the next, we go out breaking out windows with our slingshots, and then we have to go out and pay for the windows. It's been going on that way for generations, at least in my family. Now here's the moral of the story. There's two ways for us to learn. Now, you can learn from revelation or you can learn from experience, but experience being the best teacher is a god-awful hard way to learn. So God comes along and says, you know, it'd be a lot better for us if we could learn from my revelation. Let me tell you. Let me give you that kind of experience. Now, that kind of experience you can get right out of the book of Revelation. Excuse me, the book of Proverbs. Revelation comes out of the book of Proverbs. Now, there's about 600 of those Proverbs in there. Some of them are a little hard to understand, and that's because Proverbs are for the wise. They're not for fools. The book of Proverbs is not for the fool. It's for the wise man. So if you're a fool and you'd like to become wise, then the book of Proverbs is for you. Yeah, I'm running out of time again. So we're just about down to the end of the line here. So let me remind you that you have been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now remember, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week. 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard 7 days a week around the world over the Internet daily. For more information about the Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now remember, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, please call the Law School at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to the homeschooling site. That's our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, our time's up. We've got to leave it right there. So we'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody. And good night, friends.